At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, where talking about money is encouraged. Let's get talking. Hello, Money Buddies, and welcome to this week's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Today, we're talking about some alternative financial advice, and I'm sure you've heard the normal one-size-fits-all advice that everyone gives. Well, today's episode is going to go against some of that and to help you see some different ideas when it comes to managing your money. I'm also looking forward to today's Money Talk to help challenge some of my own beliefs when it comes to managing money. I think conversations like the one we're going to have today are very helpful to anyone, whether you're managing money for years and years or just getting started. Pushing back against normal advice can help you learn some of the alternatives when it comes to handling your money and help you see that other people may have a different and potentially better way of handling their money. I'm excited today to challenge some of my own thoughts around money. And one piece I struggle to think differently about is how we can invest or save for retirement in a way that maybe doesn't include a 401k. And I've even had a hard time sometimes thinking about ways to invest outside of low-cost index funds. So today we're going to hit on some investing topics directly, so I hope you're as excited for today's interview as I am. But before we get into it, let me introduce today's guest. Today's Money Buddy is Dana Miranda. Dana is a certified educator in personal finance, creator of the Healthy Rich newsletter, and author of You Don't Need a Budget, Stop Worrying About Debt, Spend Without Shame, and Manage Money with Ease. She writes about how capitalism impacts the way we think, teach, and talk about money. Dana's expert behind the nationally syndicated Dear Penny financial advice column and a regular contributor, Business Insider, Fortune, CNET Money, and Salon, and founding member of the Kiplinger Advisor Collective. Dana grew up in a working-class family in a small town in Wisconsin. When she joined the ranks of personal finance media in 2015, she found the niche led mostly by advice and admonitions from middle-class white men, ignoring the broad diversity of our relationships with work and money. After leaving a leadership position with a popular financial media startup and spending 2 years as a freelance writer, she created Healthy Rich to help change how we talk about money. And I'm really excited for today's conversation with Dana. She's been on the podcast before, so you're probably recognizing her name. The money talking points for this week are: do you view budgeting in a way that's damaging to your relationship with money? What does your money map look like? And third, how can you use debt to support your life goals? So without further ado, let's get into today's conversation. Welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Joining me today, I have Dana Miranda, and this is a return guest. We're here to talk about her new book that's coming out, and I'm excited to talk with you again, Dana. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for everyone?
Sure. Thanks for having me back. My name is Dana Miranda, and I am a personal finance journalist. I write the newsletter Healthy Rich on Substack, and my new book is You Don't Need a Budget. It'll be out at the end of December.
We talked previously on my podcast about budgeting, budget culture, some of the main things around that. So that's a great episode to go back and listen to get a head start on this one. But could you give a quick overview of what budget culture is?
Sure. It's the way that I talk about the ways that we think and teach and talk about money in our culture, sort of the dominant approach that is rooted in restriction, shame, and greed. So we have a focus on individual responsibility, just like we do with a lot of things in our culture. If somebody's financial circumstances are not what they want them to be, or if someone's struggling financially, we lean on shaming them and prescribing restriction in order to meet kind of an arbitrary set of financial goals.
It's kind of like that general idea of, oh, you shouldn't be spending that. You should feel bad if you overspend, things like that. Is that a fair summary, I guess?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just anything, like you said, should a lot. Anytime you're hearing like you should be doing this with your money, a lot of times that's rooted in budget culture beliefs.
How can that be bad for people? What is the harm in all those shoulds?
The biggest issue that I see with the ways that we teach money and talk about money in our culture is the lack of nuance. So anytime one person is saying another person should do something, that advice is coming from, if I'm telling you, you should do something with your money, that advice is coming from what I know and from what I have experienced. And it's not taking into account your individual circumstances and needs and best interests.
Mm, that makes sense. Because yeah, everyone will say personal finance is personal, but then we go out and give this blanket advice that everyone has to follow. How do we be aware of stuff that's commonly in budget culture? What are some of the key things we can notice when that's the direction of advice we're being given?
Yeah, so it's really valuable to kind of read about personal finance and try to learn about how our systems work and how different financial products work and things like that, because there's just so much that we don't know and we don't have a lot of formal education on the subject. So it's good to keep reading like personal finance media and seeking financial education, but definitely look out for those places where someone is making that kind of blanket statement about what is right or wrong, or what someone should or should not be doing, good versus bad spending, good versus bad debt. A lot of times, anytime someone is trying to lay something out as really black and white, that should raise a red flag and maybe just kind of be a cue to you to ask some more questions, dig a little bit deeper and see how that might actually fit in with your personal circumstances.
Awesome. Yeah, look out for that blanket advice. Like you said, if they're trying to make it black and white, that's probably somewhere to maybe steer clear of, which makes sense in my book because, like I said, personal finance is personal. So we do have to be careful for those. You have to do it this way or that way. But one of the things, your book and kind of your message is called You Don't Need a Budget. And I do kind of want to just talk through budgeting a little bit here because my wife and I, we like the way we manage our budget. It's been good for us. We sit down once a month, split up our last month's income for the next month's transactions. That a typical way someone might budget. Is budgeting something we should avoid altogether, or can it be helpful for people?
In the same way that I think other financial gurus and financial experts shouldn't be giving blanket advice, I try not to do that as well. I personally don't steer people toward budgeting, and I talk a lot about the research that we see on how budgeting can be harmful and ways that it doesn't work. But ultimately, I always recommend that you do what makes sense for you. So if you and your wife are in a place where that is making sense, then I wouldn't just come out and say that is something that you should stop or that's something that you should avoid. What I do encourage, if for to push back on people who say my budget is working for me, it's really helped to categorize or track spending or to restrict, is to just step back and ask why that seems to be working for you. Think about what are your financial and personal goals, what's in your best interests, what kind of life are you trying to live, and how can money support that? And then ask yourself how keeping a budget or some kind of budgeting or spend tracking habit is serving those goals or not. You might find ways that it could actually be holding you back, or that it's hurting your relationship with money, your mindset about money. If it's something that feels like it's encouraging restriction, I would definitely take a step back and see if there's another way that you could manage money to avoid that.
Yeah, I love that. I love the approach of saying, if someone is budgeting, you're not going to just come in with the blanket of advice of just saying, don't budget, which is good to see it both ways. I do like that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I honestly struggle to wrap my mind around some way of budgeting that's not budgeting. Like, I don't even know what to call it, I guess, so to speak. So when we're trying to look at other options, what are some of those?
So I recommend managing money with a more intuitive approach. And the way that I look at money management, budgeting, and budget culture is kind of in parallel to what we see in diet culture and with dieting. Mm-hmm. I look to that to see how are people responding. And intuitive eating is a really common, and you can do the same kind of thing with spending to tap into what you need. Again, I go back to a lot of what are your goals and needs and best interests to think about what is the day that you want to have, the life that you want to live, the goals that you want to achieve, and how can money support that? And so with each spending decision, you can ask yourself that same question. How does this support, you know, whatever goal it is? And that doesn't have to mean restriction. That doesn't have to mean avoiding what a lot of people call impulse spending, or, you know, or even spending with debt, using credit cards, things like that. It's just about how does money serve you in this moment or this season, and how does it serve, you know, you in the long term, and getting an idea of that. And from a more practical standpoint, I recommend in the book, I lay out a series of exercises that I call a money map, which is kind of a just a general term that a lot of people use. But the way that I recommend it is just laying out the resources that you have access to, the financial commitments that you've made, the goals you want to achieve, and then taking all that information and ending up with a number that I call a yes fund, which is kind of the money that you can spend without thinking about it. So you don't have to track it. You don't have to restrict certain categories, things like that. And you don't have to do it like a budget where you're like planning your spending ahead of time or tracking your spending as you go. But a money map just helps you see your financial situation so that you have a clear understanding of if you decide to spend on a vacation today or a dinner out or whatever it is that people a lot of times are apprehensive about, how does that impact other areas of your life? You know, are you going to have to take on an extra freelance assignment? Are you going to contribute less to a savings goal this month? When you can understand what those implications are in your financial situation, you can make a more informed decision and kind of a decision from an empowered place instead of just following a set of rules or setting sort of arbitrary restrictions for yourself that you don't quite know why they exist.
And if you're just restricting spending because, oh, I heard I'm only supposed to spend 5% to go out to eat or something like that, or you hear those percentages that commonly get thrown out, and you, if it was just 6%, maybe that's what you need. Like maybe that's that empowering number that you're talking about, where that little bit of a difference is that restriction versus feeling a little more confident in your spending. But because you're following that one size fits all rule, that can make it a little bit more challenging.
That's where the shame then comes in, is when you have this rule. I need to be saving 10% toward various goals and retirement. If you're doing things that don't allow you to do that, then you can start to feel guilty even as you're sort of living your life the way you want to. But understanding that you don't have to follow those arbitrary rules can help you let go of that shame and just enjoy the life that you're living now.
You answered the question that I was going to ask about rules of thumb and things like that. So that's perfect. But I heard you mention something you called a yes fund, and that really stood out to me there. Do you think that is a useful tool for people to start implementing, even just a small step to stop feeling like they're restricted?
I do. And the name I think is kind of cheesy, but the Yes Fund I stuck with and stand behind because it's kind of the opposite of the way that we often approach budgeting, which is restrictive. It's about saying what you can't do or what your limits are. And what I want you to be able to do with managing money is as often as possible, when you're wondering if you can use money a certain way, if you can spend money a certain way, to be able to say yes. Because if it's something that you want, I want you to be able to say yes to it. So how can you organize your life and your finances and your goals to be able to do that as much as possible? And that tool I came up with based on an online bank account that I had been using, which had something called a safe to spend account, which was basically the way that it organized your money in sort of different buckets within the bank account would fund any savings goals that you set. It would fund financial commitments, expenses that you needed sort of throughout the month. And then the money that showed up in your bank account, just like if you were looking at your checking account balance, was safe to spend. And that, for me, was a really freeing way to manage money. It's kind of the pay yourself first model. But what I really like about it is that I can look at my bank account and see, yes, this is how much I have to spend. I don't have to wonder, well, I have certain bills coming up. I have to contribute so much to savings or whatever out of that pool. The pool that I'm looking at is the amount that I can spend. I created the Yes Fund so you can sort of use that as a guide to organize your money, regardless of what tools you're using.
Yeah. And I'm hearing you're describing something like a bucket almost that you can use as that fund. And I know there's several banks out there that do have buckets that you could set one up and you could title it the Yes Fund. And then you put your money in there and that's the one that you mark as spending comes out of that one. So I like that idea because then it gives people a little bit more freedom. And I'm really anxious to start talking about investing and long-term savings with you as well. But I know that's going to come a little bit later in our discussion, but I do want to talk about debt and maybe some of society's views and how debt can be helpful, because so many people try so hard to steer completely clear of debt. There's very popular financial media talking heads out there that tell you to stay completely away from it. How can debt be useful? How can it help us support our life goals?
Debt is another resource that's available to us, just like income, just like government or community support and benefits that we have access to. Debt is a resource that can expand your access to whatever you want to buy. So if you think about, you know, if your bank account goes to zero, but you have a credit card with a certain credit limit, you have that additional resource that you can continue to live your life, whether that is to make ends meet because you have to pay bills and buy groceries, or whether it is because you just absolutely need something that you would consider a luxury or a comfort this week. Rather than think of it as kind of this sort of like evil thing that exists in our society, I reframed debt as a resource. It's a way to expand the resources available to you. And you can do that in a way that's helpful to your financial situation by understanding how debt products work. I think a big reason that a lot of people feel really out of control with debt is because they don't understand how loans and credit cards tend to work and what the consequences are of using those. And so it can be really overwhelming and really intimidating and really stressful to try to manage those when you don't actually know how they work and what the implications of different financial decisions actually are. So understanding the fees and interest on your credit cards, you know, based on the payments that you make, understanding when your credit card debt actually starts accruing interest, which a lot of people don't know. You know, it's not until the end of the billing cycle. You usually have about a month to pay that before any interest is accrued. Understanding how that impacts your credit score, understanding how compound interest works so that you can kind of see what that looks like long term if you're going to be carrying a balance, things like that. Understanding what your options are for student loan debt in particular so that you can handle that in a way that fits into your life. I think debt can be really helpful to expand your resources and access to the life that you want to live, as long as you have an understanding of how those products work so that you can, again, make decisions from a more empowered and informed place.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of it's all about awareness is kind of the notes I'm taking here. We have to make sure we're aware of the things we want to spend on and the way that debt is actually used. Because like you said, most people don't get how a credit card repayment works. And when I worked at a call center for a credit union, that was one of the most common questions we'd get. They'd be like, why wasn't there any interest on my credit card this month, but there was last month, but they didn't understand statement balances and things like that. So I'm hearing like you can use all these tools if you understand how they actually work. It's when we don't understand how they work that we're suddenly in $8,000-$10,000 of credit card debt and we don't get it. Then you feel frustrated. You start taking the blanket advice that's shaming you and guilt tripping you into feeling so bad for just simply not understanding one of the rules with debt. When as you start to gain that understanding, you can feel more confident with those tools. If people get to a point where they're feeling bad, how do you kind of overcome that a little bit? And even though you still probably want to work out of debt, I don't think you're saying let's stay in debt, but how do you overcome that shame that maybe comes with it?
That's the really hard part. And I want to say on that too, when I say you need to understand how these products work, that's not to shame people who have credit cards or student loans and don't understand the debt that they've taken on, because that's really all by design. That's part of budget culture. Part of the way that we approach money in this culture is to push debt on people or put people in situations where they can only get by tapping into that resource, but never giving them the information that they need to actually deal with it in a way that's going to work for them. And so that's the first thing, is just understanding that whatever situation you're in, it's by design. It's not because you have done something wrong or that you have failed necessarily. The system is really designed to put you in that situation, with debt products especially. Those are really designed to just get people to use them and to pay interest on them. And that's kind of the bet that credit card companies and lenders are taking, is that you won't fully comprehend how to make those work without it costing you a lot of money. So
it's not your fault, I think, is that the line from Goodwill Hunting? Yeah. I feel like everyone, every financial planner just needs to start sessions there, just give people a hug and tell them it's not your fault, because we live in a system and a society and a culture that is intended to put you in a difficult situation financially.
I've said on a couple different episodes when I'm thinking about it, because credit card interest subsidizes those credit card rewards that are so tempting and things like that. And as I was talking about it, I was like, I would have no problem with credit card rewards not existing if the credit card debt on the other side of it didn't exist either. But as you start thinking about that, our entire economy would have to change, because people are instructed, you put everything on debt, you pay that monthly payment. That's the way things are set up, because things are so expensive, or they're like teased with these crazy deals that are actually just going to make a ton of money on the back end. And everything would have to change if we got rid of credit card debt as a whole. And that, I think, is a key into what you're saying about how the system is kind of set up around you to put you in a hard place. Because if that didn't exist, everything would be different, which is just a, once you start thinking about that, you start going down that wormhole and that rabbit hole, that there's so much around us that makes things hard for us. Because like, you walk into any retail store and there's pamphlets and signs about their credit cards, you get 10% back at their store, but they don't mention the interest rate's 20% or something like that. So mm-hmm. I completely see the point you're saying there. That is honestly true. Let's start it with, it's not your fault.
Yeah, I think that's really important to overcoming that shame. And that was one of the biggest questions that I got actually from beta readers on my book, was how do you overcome that shame? And that's a really big question. I wish that I could really just say, here are the five steps to overcome budget culture shame. But I think that's the most important thing, is just understanding it's not your fault, and then asking questions about how things work, because I think you'll feel a lot less shame if you feel informed and able to make decisions with the full information, rather than just feeling like you're trying to follow a set of rules that don't quite make sense to you and that you can't quite achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you start to ask questions, you'll understand, wow, I just didn't have this key piece of information. If I would have known this 6 months ago, I could have paid off the credit card before the statement balance was due and had none of this reverse compounding interest. Let's talk a little bit about how debt can support life goals, because recently I've had an experience with this as well. I'm doing the coursework to become a CFP, and we got a credit card offer in the mail for a 0% for 18 billing cycles or something like that. And I was like, oh, this lines up well with what I want to do there. And I think that's an example of being educated with debt, that I could put this maybe more expensive than we can pay right now program on a credit card and let it go over that 18 months and pay it back. How can debt support us in our life goals with maybe stuff similar to that or other options?
That's a great example. It's something that when you look at your resources right now and you look at your goals right now, so your goal of getting that certification might not line up with the resources you have available, or maybe you could pay that up front right now, but then you're really going to have to restrict on other things.
That's where that was it.
The money map and getting that comprehensive view. Maybe you have the cash, but it would drain your savings so that you don't have a rainy day fund and you're a lot less comfortable for the next 18 months. So that's one way that it just makes things accessible to you that you might not otherwise be able to access. It makes life more comfortable. It also helps, you know, the kinds of things that financial experts call good debt, like student loans or mortgages or something that are always recommended, because they help you sort of buy skills or assets that could potentially build wealth in the future. Mm-hmm. It gives you access. Most of us in the United States don't have just cash on hand to purchase a house, which the way that our systems are set up is really important to wealth building, and especially generational wealth building. And so being able to take on mortgage debt is a way to do that and take that step, which can be transformative for a lot of people. So there's a lot of things that debt can buy for you. But essentially, I just think of it as a way of expanding your resources, because a lot of times it's not easy to be able to buy everything that you need to live a life and to live safely and securely and comfortably without having those additional resources just within the resources that you could earn from working.
Yeah. And a little bit of what I'm thinking about is, if we're only shaming against debt, or there's so much shame, you can't go into debt, any sort of debt at all. It's kind of like saying, hey, can you hang up this picture, but you're not allowed to use a hammer. Like, you're only allowed to use a screwdriver. But it just doesn't work like that. That's kind of the picture that I'm painting in my mind, that there's multiple tools in our hands that we can use either one to help us accomplish our goals instead of just like removing one for seemingly no reason.
That's a fantastic way of framing it. I will pass that on.
Yeah. TM, I trademarked it. There we go.
Yes.
Now, is there a type of debt that should be avoided? I kind of think of payday loans. There's kind of those ones that are probably also predatory, like the culture builds around it. But is there maybe some that we should just keep out of our mind?
I wouldn't give a blanket rule for that. That's definitely like payday loans and buy now, pay later apps come to mind for a lot of people. There's a lot more warnings against those than against credit cards or mortgages or student loans. They're all predatory to some degree, because the idea is that like some bank or some person or entity with more resources gets to hoard that resource that the rest of us don't have access to, and we have to pay them for access to it. And so payday loans in particular are just one that costs a lot more to access that resource. But they can also be very valuable to people who can't access debt in any other way. People don't tend to use payday loans without understanding how costly they are. People tend to go into those situations with eyes wide open. It's just difficult to manage that debt once you have it, because it really adds up. So I wouldn't set a blanket rule on any types of debt that you absolutely should avoid. I think using any kind of debt follows that, just follow that same kind of guideline of understand how it works and what you might deal with kind of on the back end. And even if you can't, a lot of times the advice is like, you know how credit card interests work and make sure that you have a plan to pay that off by the end of the month or whatever, if you're going to make a purchase. Even if you know that that's not going to be an option, if you're taking out a payday loan or doing a buy now, pay later, and knowing that you're not going to be able to pay it off before whatever deadline to avoid fees and interest, just knowing that is already empowering, because you just at least know what you're going to be dealing with on the other end. Yeah. Sometimes you're just in a situation where you have to dig that hole for yourself. But as long as you know where it's going to be, it's a lot less stressful. I've definitely been in that situation where I'm in the hole, but once I understood what was going on with all of my debts, it was much less stressful to kind of deal with them and manage them on the other end.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I figured with that question, I was like, she's not going to come in here and give us some blanket rule. That would just be against the whole first half of the episode. But yeah. I love the way that you painted that we still just need to be aware, even if it's going into a type of lending product that is more expensive. It's all just still about that awareness that if you know what it's going to cost ahead of time, it makes it a little easier to stomach, a little less frustrating on yourself when that like confusing product is presented and you don't understand. That's where I think that shame, it's kind of built into the product where you're like, why is the interest $400 this month? And why is it growing every day or something like that? When you understand it, you at least know what's coming, whether it's good or bad. It just helps you, like you said, feel a little bit more empowered about what is going on. But it's time to talk about investing. I want to talk about this a little bit more with you from your perspective. I can see how people have different ways of budgeting and using debt and things like that, but investing is one where I struggle to think differently than the typical way that I've been taught to invest. Low-cost index funds, funnel it all into a 401k, things like that. Is there even a different route when it comes to investing?
If you're talking about investing, like the actual term investing, which is sort of passively putting money into somewhere where it's going to grow passively and then, you know, pay on the back end, that's basically it. We have the stock market and investment funds, like you mentioned. Low-cost index funds are the most kind of widely recommended for most people because they're low risk and low cost. And so that is kind of where we're at with investing. But I do have a whole chapter in the book that talks about the ethical situation that investing puts us in, because it's really extractive in our society, rather than, even though it might feel additive because you're like, oh, I can grow my money for free, like that money has to come from somewhere. And so it's exploiting workers somewhere, it's exploiting resources, it's exploiting consumers by building profit. And then we are all benefiting from those profits in the stock market. So it's not a great way for our society to be organized. It's just the way that we have done it. But I do encourage people, if you feel sort of like you have the fortitude to kind of experiment with your long-term savings, that, or a different lifestyle, that you could try to think about different ways that you could plan for the future without necessarily relying on the stock market. I do like the potential of peer-to-peer lending as basically an alternative investment strategy. There are a lot of different ways that it's done, and some of them basically just look like investing, but some are a little bit more kind of human and focus on the human side of things, where you're making a loan to an individual. You're basically acting as the bank if you're doing it as the lender or the investor, and then they can pay back with a fee of their choosing. You're still making money off of somebody needing debt. So there's always, if you're going to make money off of money, there's going to be some question there. But there's just a way to kind of bring it down to a more human level instead of just passively making money off of money. Yeah. my money really just magically makes more. But there's also, you could build a business that you sell. You could invest in local businesses, which is essentially what you're doing, you know, in the stock market, but just investing in smaller businesses where you, again, have more of kind of a human contact with the people actually working in that business and the communities that it impacts. There are ways that you can invest to grow your money, sort of cut down on the level of exploitation that you're participating in. But all of those are a lot riskier than investing in low-cost index funds. They don't come with the tax advantages that retirement accounts come with. Everything is really set up for us to be investing in those traditional investment accounts. So I always caveat that. I don't like directly recommend that people do one thing over another, but I want to pose the questions to get us thinking about what are some alternatives and see if we can maybe turn the ship just a couple of degrees.
Yeah. To even get some sort of tax favored product that is locally smaller businesses would be huge if there was some way to do that. Because what I'm hearing is the similar sort of setup that companies or the system is set up in a way to funnel the money in this direction that kind of goes back to the credit card debt and shaming and things like that. But this one's a little bit harder to crack is kind of what I'm hearing. Like, we can say it's not your fault about credit card debt and things like that and explain that one. But it sounds like the investing take around budget culture and investing culture, that one's a little bit more challenging because, like you said, it comes with more risk because there's just bigger numbers involved in this system, which makes it challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have talked with some financial planners who, in part because of some of the ethics of investing, but also just because of the realities of our financial situation, that younger generations like Gen X and younger are a lot of times not saving enough money to retire anyway. Like, they're not following the kind of recommended savings rates because everything has been more expensive as time has gone on relative to the income that we're making. So it has become harder and harder to save for retirement. And the options, you know, available to us, like pensions and Social Security and stuff, have sort of become less and less of a safety net also. People are also talking about alternative ways of planning for retirement that include some investment, but because you don't have enough retirement savings, you might have to think about what kind of work can you do longer term and how long can you realistically work, and might you want to work, you know, part-time to be earning income? Might you, if you could afford it, could you own property and rent that out and for some kind of income? So there's kind of different ways that people are approaching retirement too, just because of our financial realities. So I think there's, especially as millennials age and as Gen X moves into retirement, we're going to have a lot of bigger conversations about this kind of just relying on investment accounts for our long-term financial stability.
That'll be interesting. That'll be very interesting to see how that plays out in the next 10 or 20 years or however long it'll be. But let's talk about your book for a moment here as we're coming to a close. You have a book coming out. What is it called? How can people find it?
So the book is called You Don't Need a Budget. In it, I investigate our cultural relationship with money, as we've been talking about, and I offer a guide to an alternative budget-free approach that doesn't rely on budget culture's focus on restriction and shame. You can find it anywhere that you buy books. It's available for pre-order, including through local bookstores. So from Amazon to Barnes & Noble to your local bookstore. And you can find out more information about it at youdontneedabudget.com.
Fantastic. When does the book release again?
December 24th.
So it'll be out in just a few weeks. Yes. That's fantastic. Real quick, our final question here as we're wrapping up. I always like to ask everyone something similar to this. What is one of the favorite things that you teach about in the book that you wish you could have told yourself maybe 10 or 15 years ago?
I loved pondering this question. I think the big thing would be I wish I could have learned how the common debt products work. I talk through that in the book, how student loans, mortgages, credit cards work. And I think if I'd have had a better understanding of how credit scores work, I might have gotten a secured credit card sooner and had more access to resources for a few years. If I had understood how my student loans worked, which I had no idea when I left college and just sort of buried my head in the sand about those for a few years, if I knew how those worked, I could have gotten on an income-driven repayment plan right away instead of waiting for years and going into default and accumulating a bunch of interest and penalties. So I would have, I think, been in a much better situation. There were a lot of years where I didn't have a lot of income and I didn't have a lot of access to resources because of a low credit score. And I think understanding how those debt products worked a lot sooner might have helped ease that a little bit.
What a great way to tie the bow on this episode. The whole time we've been talking about be aware of how your money's working for you, be aware of those credit tools that you have available. And we'll wrap it up with that everyone should go out and learn what their common credit tools or debt tools are doing for them and how they can utilize them and use them a little bit better. But Dana, thank you so much for joining. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Dana Miranda for coming on today's episode. And make sure you check out Instagram because we're going to be doing an Instagram Live. If you're listening to this on the day that this episode releases, we're going to be doing it this evening. But make sure you head over to Instagram to follow both Dana and I on Instagram and check out some of the content we're producing. But let's start on the first money talking point. Do you view budgeting in a way that's damaging to your relationship with money? What if you view budgeting in a way that's restrictive? I think that this can be a great place for you to use personal categories in your budget if you don't want to stick to a very hardcore restrictive budget. My wife and I both have categories in each of our name that we can spend on whatever we really want without a direct need to ask each other. If it's still a large purchase, we like to ask each other and talk about it. But we found that my wife likes to spend money on little things, smaller increments as she goes, where I like to save my Skylar fund for a long period of time and then spend it suddenly. And this works really well for us. I like to buy big tech things. She likes to do more hobbies and crafts and projects as time goes and use her money for that. But my biggest takeaway is that the harm of blanket advice, especially when you view budgeting in a big blanket, one size tries to fit all way. I talked about with Dana that she doesn't like to give blanket advice, and she did a great job of sticking to that in our podcast interview. So I think the take on money is really healthy when you have this kind of wide open, ignore the blanket advice, kind of seek something that works for you, because it allows us to see that there's a lot of different perspectives and opportunities, because maybe budgeting is the right way for you. Maybe it works really well, and that's what you need to stick to, and that's okay. But maybe a regular money talk is all you need to do, and maybe both of those aren't the right way at all. I think that's the thing we really need to keep our mind open to, is that there could be other options we need to consider that might be a better option for you. And I really like the idea that Dana mentioned of a yes fund. I think that a yes fund kind of goes hand in hand with what I was talking about of my wife and I having our Skylar and Rebecca funds. If you have a yes fund, that means you have a place where you're telling yourself, I can spend the money that's in here without any form of restriction, any form of shame. Nothing of that sort comes with spending your yes fund, because that's what it's called. You think, oh, I want to spend money on this. Yes, that's where that money comes from. Oh, I want to spend money on this. Yes, pull the money from your yes fund. I really like that. And I think as I think about the yes fund, I'm thinking of episode 153 with Julia Carlson, where we talked about the anti-budget. And this can be a great way to give yourself permission to spend money. I'd recommend you go back and listen to episode 153 once you're done with today's episode, because it's a really good one. If you're intrigued by the idea of a yes fund, go and check out that episode. It's going to be really good for you. So that does it for this first money talking point. I want to move into the second one here, but just to wrap up the first one is, do you view budgeting in a way that's damaging to your relationship with money? I'd be really interested to hear what you have to take. So head on over to Instagram, leave a comment on one of this week's posts. Let me know what you think. What is your view on budgeting? The second money talking point for today is, what does your money map look like? Early in the interview, I asked Dana what she would recommend to do since budgeting seems to be working well for my wife and I, and she gave some advice that I wanted to touch on, and it is going to help you figure out the direction that you want to go with your money. She mentioned in her book what she has developed called the money map, and that it's going to help you with your money by figuring out several things that impact your spending and so forth. So check out her book if you want to learn more about that specific principle, but I want to talk about some of the things she mentioned in the interview when you're considering budgeting as an option for managing your money, or other options for that matter of fact. But let's consider a couple things here. What are your goals? What are your interests? What kind of life are you trying to live, and how can money support that? How does keeping a budget or a tracking habit serve your goal? And could your current money management method be hurting your mindset? And that's a little bit of a plug-in for the first money talking point, but let's go through each one of those. What are your goals? I think it's great to be thinking about your goals no matter how you're managing your money, whether it's with a budget or not, whether it's with an anti-budget, whether it's with a spend first plan that you want to make sure you're not restricting yourself. However you're managing money, goals are, I think, a good thing to consider. And especially your interests as well. It'll help you identify some ways that you want to spend your money. If you're thinking about traveling and that's your interest, well, then you know you're going to need to spend some money in that way. And you're going to need to take off that restriction of spending several hundreds of dollars at a time on a plane ticket. You're going to need to be okay with that. So you need to make sure you have your goals and interests in mind so that you know when it comes to spending money on that thing, you can look back at this money map that you're developing with your goals and interests and say, yes, that checks that goal, that checks that interest. So consider those when you're thinking about how you want to spend money. Another thing that Dana mentioned is, what kind of life are you trying to live and how can money support that? Are you trying to travel a lot? Are you trying to be frugal to save for a goal? Maybe savings is something that you want to do. The important thing here is to not just take a blanket piece of advice and apply it. What kind of life are you trying to live and how can you have money support that? Or how do you want to spend money in support of that life you're trying to live? If it's traveling, maybe you do need to spend money to do that, and that's okay. If it's trying to be frugal to save for some goal like a down payment for a house or something like that, maybe there's some frugal steps you need to take. But identifying that is going to help you a lot with figuring out how you want to spend your money. How can keeping a budget or a tracking habit specifically help you with your goals? I think tracking is so much of a bigger deal for my wife and I. To be able for us to see where we've spent money, that's fantastic. It's great for us. It allows us to talk about and identify patterns in our spending. And I'm just telling you this story from my perspective, because maybe there's one week that we did eat out more than we wanted to, or more than our goals and our interests really are going to allow us to, because we're kind of allowing those things that we've set, the parameters that we've set, to guide our money management. And maybe eating out too much one week isn't aligned with those goals. I think tracking allows us to see what's actually happening there and for us to point at that and identify, hey, that wasn't necessarily aligned with our goals. But tracking allows us to find that for ourselves and not only have to go based on some blanket one size tries to fit all advice. We're not going solely on some recommended percentage for eating out because we know what fits into our goals and date nights, things like that. So make sure you understand, is your tracking habit serving you and how can it do that? And then another thing to think about is, could your money management method be hurting your mindset? And I think it can tend to put me in a mindset of not wanting to be free with my money. I don't want to be impulsive, I guess, so to speak, but it kind of does put me in that restrictive mindset, like I think Dana's been talking about. I'm wanting to restrict myself because of the sake of keeping these numbers low, which can be good or bad, but I've worked on this a lot. I am much more willing now to be spontaneous with money than I ever used to be before. It was a no-go before. I didn't want to spend money. I didn't want to spend it freely, of course, but I think I've grown in that way because we track our money and I can feel confident with what we're doing now. Because if you're not tracking it, in my opinion, I think the lack of tracking leads to this over-control where you don't really know what's going on with your money, so you feel like you have to control it all very aggressively. That's why I think just a bare bones amount of tracking to see categories can be really helpful, because then you know where your money is actually going. Maybe you're saving more than you're spending and you didn't even realize it because you're not tracking it. So that's why I think tracking can be a huge tip or tool for people to implement into how they want to manage money. But tracking can also be harmful if my spending aligns with my goals and interests, but some random spreadsheet number says that I can't do something. So make sure you're still being aware of those goals and interests and not solely following a spreadsheet. But I think as you continue to work through those conversations to develop your money map, you're going to get better and better and better with it. But let's move on to the third money talking point here. How can you use debt to support your life goals? I really, really, really like this question. How can debt support your life goals? Let's think about it, because maybe you're in a stage of life where taking on some debt can be a really good thing. And I know that's a little weird to say, but I like the idea that Dana suggested about being aware of what your debt products do and understanding how they work. Let's think about right now, as we're talking about this money talking point, what are some ways that you could use debt to support a life goal? Maybe there's a job that you do unfortunately need a car to get to. So maybe an auto loan can help you with the goal of getting a specific job. Maybe a personal loan can help you achieve some goals that you have with a friend or a family member. It's all about understanding the costs and not being manipulated by a system in place that tries to land us in debt. Maybe you need to use a credit card to get through a tough spot. The system will probably try to mask your credit card usage in some sort of a promotion, a 0% promotion that can be good, but you need to make sure you understand how it works. That's where the real power comes in managing our money, is understanding the, I guess, terms and conditions, for lack of a better term, behind our debt products. If you find yourself in debt, remember what Dana and I were saying, it's not your fault. It's extremely common, and I've seen it so many times, that people find themselves in poor financial situations due to marketing and sales of these giant organizations that are just set up to take our money. So give yourself some slack and begin to understand your debt products and move forward. Understand how the interest works. Understand how the different benefits that your credit union is offering can actually help you or can hurt you. Because I think so many times people hear, skip a payment for Christmas, and they think, oh, we're just going to magically move one payment to the end of the loan, but you're actually increasing your overall cost to borrow by letting more interest accrue on your next payment at a higher balance. If you begin to understand that, you'll understand how they're just trying to siphon more money from you by offering this thing that looks nice or looks like a helpful tool, which maybe it is a helpful tool, but once you understand how it's actually working, that's when you can have the most power in your financial life to continue to do better with debt. So if you do want to get out of debt, I think that's a great thing to do. But if you need to use debt, make sure you understand how it can support your life goals. You heard in the interview, I was telling Dana a story about how I used a credit card to purchase the CFP course that I'm doing. And I used a credit card that came at the right time with a 0% promotion, but I made sure I understand how that promotion worked. My wife and I talked about how we could use this card with its 0% interest over the next 18 billing cycles to pay for this CFP program over time. And we have the money to pay for it. It wasn't that expensive. But by being able to spread it out, it makes it a whole lot easier to cover. We're not suddenly draining our emergency fund or some other sort of savings that we have set up, like a trip or something that's coming sooner than we could take to pay off the credit card. So there's a lot of different options that debt can bring into your life. You just need to make sure you understand how it works so you can use it well. But I want to wrap up today's episode. We're coming here to a close, and I appreciate all of you for listening. I hope you found this episode helpful, and I hope it helps you have a money talk with a friend or a family member. Simply share this episode with them and then go and have a money talk with them about it. I've found that sharing episodes with my friends from other podcasts leads to fun and engaging conversations about that topic, so give it a shot. Click share and let your friend know what you liked from the episode. And also, this is my first episode back in a while. You probably heard the trailer that came out last week, and I hope you liked it. That trailer is really going to help me stay focused on who we're serving, who we're talking to, and the kind of money talks we're having. So make sure to share with your friends and get them on board with this Money Buddy community. And you may have noticed the new format in today's episode. I'm going for slightly longer interviews with some focused extra conversation solely on the money talking points. So you can take those talking points and then go discuss them with a friend or family member or someone you know. And if you have any feedback at all or any sort of suggestions or comments on the show, head over to moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com/contact and submit the form. I'd be happy to make any adjustments you'd like to see to the show, especially if it's going to help make it better. And that form is also a great place to submit guest recommendations. So if you heard someone on a podcast that you listen to that you'd like to hear them on here and maybe have us battle it out over one of your favorite topics, submit a recommendation through that form. I'd love to see them. But let's wrap it up here. Today's conversation was a great one about avoiding the blanket one size tries to fits all advice out there. It can sometimes do more harm than good. Really, it's all about awareness of our own financial situation and understanding the cost of what we're doing. And don't forget to check out Dana's book when it comes out in a few weeks. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.